Elijah's Vision is coming soon, folks. Welcome to the Rebel Madman radio program here on the 20th day of April in the year of 2024 here at Republic Broadcasting Network. And before we jump into the main part of today's show, I would like to sincerely invite you folks to find whatever means that you can to support RBN, because this is one of the last bastions of free speech which is actually out there. And when we lose free speech, folks, we've lost it all. And it's rapidly approaching. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, hit that donate button, or, you know, just call them up. Find a way to contribute. And with that being said, we are going to jump in today's program. And our special guest here is our friend Matt from out in Montana. And Matt has been on with me before, usually with our friend Blackbird 9, where we have done our best to dispel as many myths about Germany in World War II as we possibly could to try to bring forth the truth. Matt does a lot of research in that area. But, you know, this is Confederate History Month. And I also have with me, the old, my fellow partners in crime. But Matt, how are you doing, buddy?
Good, Mike. How are you? I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's always great to have you. And tell the folks a little bit about the research that you're involved in.
Sure. I'm figure out the grand conspiracy, right? Everything that we've ever been taught has basically been a lie. So I've just been trying to, I guess, connect it all, like you and everybody else. And my my favorite thing to research, or my real passion is like what you said, World War II. I think that we've just, every single thing about World War II we've been lied to. So that's really what gets me going.
Well, and you have done a yeoman's job of getting that done. I know that we have really enjoyed our conversations with you before on that subject. But let me bring in our other guest here, Matt. I'm not sure you've met him, but I want you to. And let's start with the fellow out there getting ready to do a nosedive into Lake Havasu, and that would be Mr. Cal Robbins. Cal, how are you?
No, I'm doing good today, Mike. It's we might hit 100 degrees today, so we're buried out here at 10 feet of sunshine.
You poor fellas.
I actually had to go out on the lake yesterday. It was tough, but somebody had to do it.
Do you have a sunshine plow?
Yes, we do. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, good. You're in good shape. You're in good shape. And then let's jump to our good friend there in Ohio, Jim Saj Ram. Jim, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing great. Just got off the lawnmower. Been wonderful, sunny and cool here. We're going to get 52 today, so Cal's got us whooped by a big bit.
He almost doubled you, Jim.
I'm telling you.
And then, of course, we've got our retired airline pilot from that in Alabama. It would be none other than Daryl Wayne. DW, how are you, buddy?
Having a great day. It's cloudy and cool here, and it's perfect old man weather, so I'm feeling good.
Well, you guys are making me angry here because it's cloudy in 86 here. So, you know, I'm trying to catch a cow. I don't think I'll make it, but I'm trying to. But you know, you do most of your research. Well, I want to let you explain that to the folks. Where have you done most of your research to come up with the facts that you've been able to find over the years?
What are my sources?
Well, how do you do it? Where do you go? What do you look for? So maybe you can help some folks out there who are actually beginning to search for the truth, and you can help them in their pursuits.
Sure. I mean, I use a lot of different, databases like Chronicling America, which is an enormous newspaper database. Obviously, archive.org and stuff like that, where there's lots of books that are stored. And after finding out about you a couple of years ago, you've inspired me to really try to find a lot of source material, right? Like, people said at the time period from the people actually involved, right? Than what people say after the fact. And that's what really got me into the World War II stuff, was because I found some websites that had a tremendous amount of interviews from Germans who lived during World War II, fought during World War II and before. And so it was interesting hearing what they had to say as opposed to what we are all taught now. And it was just, contradicted everything. And so, yeah, that's what I tried to do.
Well, thanks, Matt. Appreciate that. And, we have talked before, and we're well aware that there's a reason we've been lied to about history. There's a reason that the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto has taken over the public school system in America. History has been eliminated, and it has been replaced with socialism studies.
Yep.
So, why do you think we've been lied to about the events of World War II, Matt?
I think that Germany, in my opinion, I think Germany has figured out what was going on, who their enemy was, and, they took action to try to correct their country. I mean, everything that was happening then in Germany in the 1920s and 30s, we can see happening today in all of our nations over the last 20, 30, you guys would probably say even longer than that, 50, 60 years. So, people realized what Germany was fighting for in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, they would have a better idea of what we should be fighting for today. And I think that also relates to the Civil War as well.
Oh, well, many times, and I think I've used that phrase about those who fail to learn from the lessons of history are destined to repeat its mistakes. And I think that is the primary reason that most of this stuff is perverted or just absolutely kept from us from ever knowing.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let my friends here kind of throw some questions at you. Matt, you all ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Cal, what questions would you have for Matt?
I would just love to hear everything he's got to say. I haven't studied anything he's put out there yet. It obviously comes as no surprise to me that pretty much everything about World War II was a lie, because looking back in history, pretty much everything we've been taught was a lie. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, DW and I were discussing ancient history all the way back to, 3500 BC? Mm-hmm. And not just direct lies, but lies of omission. Why are these things not taught? Is it so that they can control everybody, so they can control the narrative, control the reality in people's minds, to get people to avoid repeating the same pitfalls that humanity's gone through since ancient history, probably from before history, man's been repeating the same thing. So what Matt does is just bring further evidence to light, I'm sure, of the lies. And part of what it is, one, like you asked, Mike, why is it, are we lied to either by directly or by omission? And who's doing it? That's also important. Who's behind this? And not just why, but who?
Oh, Matt, how would you answer Cal's question?
As far as who's behind it?
Yes. You can say it. We don't mind.
Yeah, I mean... all right, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, World War II, the Germans and all of their allies, I mean, basically every European country that fought with them, identified, obviously, the Bolshevik Jews as and the capitalistic Jewish bankers as the, the problem, the ones who were causing all the revolutions and whatnot. And obviously then, as Mike, you've done. You've traced it all back through the Civil War, back through the Marxist Revolution, and their move over to America. It's, you know, it's the same story all throughout history, and the same people, no matter what conflict you look at.
Oh yes, and that is spot on. And Jim, what question might you have for Matt?
I'm just wondering if all of his research shows that Hitler was actually funded and brought to power by the U.S. and U.K.
In my opinion, based on what I've found, I do not believe that to be true. But every single German interview that I've read, any German source, anything, they all refute that. Yeah, so I mean, that's my opinion. I don't think that the sources that I've looked into that state that actually prove that, but you know, I could be wrong. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, interesting.
That would make me want to ask you a question there. What about the wonderful Prescott Bush and Alan Dulles? They were very much involved in funneling money through to Germany during the war. I think the documents are out there. Have you had a chance to look at those, Matt?
I have in the past, and for me, they didn't really do it. But I honestly, it's been a while, so I don't remember. I know Dulles and Bush. I actually found stuff. Man, I don't have it in front of me, but it actually was contradictory to that some Germans had written. They were working against Germans and actually working with subversives within the German government, because there were traitors within the German what the Germans are trying to do for themselves, whether they were Jews, whether they were part of the aristocracy. So they may have worked with them, but it wasn't to help Germany. It was to subvert Germany. At least, I mean, again, that's my understanding.
Well, we know that there was, especially if we go back to, you know, the operation where after the war, where we brought in all of the, well, not all of them, but many of the Germans into the American government, Operation Paperclip. So how do you balance that with the fact that we weren't helping Germany during the war?
Okay, yeah, so I've actually read about that, and I've actually, there are some, you know, some German sources or whatever you want to call interviews about that. So yeah, at the end of the war, I mean, the Germans had no choice in anything, right? It was an unconditional surrender. They were being genocided by the Soviets. I mean, it was anything went, right? I mean, the Germans literally had no say in anything at the end of the war. So the scientists and all of them, the inventors that the Americans, they didn't come over here willingly. It wasn't like it was a vacation for them. They were kidnapped, or they were bribed, or they were murdered. So, yeah, it's not, you know, in my opinion, it's not like what we've been taught. The Germans did not want to come here. They were forced to come here. And after a lot of them were used, they were actually, some of them anyway, were actually then brought up on war crimes charges a decade later. It's unbelievable. So we used them and then dumped them. So that's what my research shows. Like I said, it could be wrong, but.
Well, we do know at that time, Matt, that the U.S. government was under the control of Stalin and his communist regime. They controlled FDR. There's no doubt about that.
100%. Totally agree.
So when we look at that, and then it begins to become a real question, because most of the Soviets were Jewish in their high command under Stalin. So kind of help me bridge that gap, please.
Well, the Soviets and our government were all working together, right? Their goal together, the government was basically working with or controlled by the Jewish communists as well, right? FDR and White, and I mean, you can go on and on. It was a world conspiracy against Germany and Europe, basically, the way I view that war. So, you know, the Soviets and the Americans, I guess, you know, Soviets had their own Operation Paperclip, and they just kind of split who they were going to kidnap. And the one that most of the Germans wanted to come to America because they obviously, right, the Germans stated a million times they were fighting against Jewish Bolshevism and Jewish communism. So why would they want to go to Soviet Russia? And one other quick thing here, if you read the German interviews, a lot of the Germans, for whatever reason, I don't know why, they thought that America would have a change of heart and realize who the true enemy was. And so a lot of the scientists felt like if they went to America, then maybe the Americans would, you know, come to good, come and fight with them. But obviously that didn't happen.
Oh, okay. DW, do you have some questions for Matt?
Well, I had no idea when we started this that we were going to have such an interesting conversation. Thank you, Matt. Man, where do I go with that? Well, I just have a simple question for you to start with here. Are you familiar with the works of a British man, author, who actually, I think he naturalized as an American, or a U.S. citizen anyway, Anthony Sutton? Are you familiar with him?
Yep, I know who he is, and I've read some of his stuff.
Yeah. Well, he provides a rather interesting amount of material, one of them being one of those books being Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler.
Yes.
I guess the question that I have is what opinion or position have you come to an understanding of the what you would call the general population or the normal German, and I mean by that European ethnically German during this period known as Weimar Germany. What were, you know, from a human point of view, what was the conditions that these people were living in during this period?
In my opinion, again, I think it's similar to, actually worse than what we would have in America and most European countries now, right? You had poverty was widespread, right? The bankers were destroying the monetary system. You had the supposed hyperinflation and also contracting the money supply, high interest rates. You had the spread of pornography, homosexuality, child trafficking, white slavery, race mixing. It was endless that they had over in Germany. It was in Europe. It wasn't just confined to Germany in twenties and thirties. I think the people were, distraught, upset, confused, didn't know who to blame, right? A lot of people just blamed the government, not the people in government. They didn't identify necessarily who the people were who had taken over after the Kaiser abdicated. So that's my opinion, right? I mean, I feel like we see all that stuff today, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the I think a lot of times that the average normal sort of common man of Germany, man and woman and the family, don't really get much recognition for the circumstances through which they were enduring through. Just from my own experience in life and those around me, I've been around a while. Most of us are just looking for, take care of our daily needs and a roof over our head and food in our stomach and, just the basic necessities of life. I've just never, and maybe you can correct this, maybe I got something wrong here, but I've just never read or become aware of anything about the common man and woman in the German population that were zealously trying to conquer the world. I've never seen any writings where they had ambitions of hegemony and dominion over the rest of the world. I mean, do I have something wrong here?
No, you are 100% correct. They just wanted to be left alone. and live their lives. And that's what basically was arguing for, that the Germans should be able to determine their own fate and not leave it in the hands of a foreign people, which, you know, were the Jewish bankers, Jewish capitalists, and the Jewish revolutionaries.
Well, very well said. And I also think we need to look at the fact that, you know, the German people after World War One were just absolutely depressed under the terms of that armistice. And they were just, you know, they had their economy was nothing. I mean, they were just being manipulated and handled, much like we are in America today. And the people got tired of that. And then, you know, we had Hitler emerge. And so then, you know, of course, he brought the people loved him, obviously. I mean, you know, people just go look at his speeches and what have you. And I know we get all of these things about, oh, how nasty and bad he was. But has there ever been anybody that the wonderful Jewish bankers have told us who was bad, who was really bad? I don't think
so. No, it's usually always the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, is very to the point. Well, considering, you know, Matt, how much do you know about, now, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, just asking a question. How much do you know about the Jewish influence over Abraham Lincoln and the beginning of the Civil War in America?
Well, again, I was not that aware of it until I heard you talk about it a while back, and so I'm fairly aware now. I think we talked about that. The how many B'nai B'rith members surrounded Abraham Lincoln was unbelievable.
Well, also, I think one of the things we miss, folks, is that when the radical Marxists were kicked out of Europe in 1848, and then they suddenly came flying to America, does anyone on the panel here, anyone have any idea how much that the Jewish population of America increased from 1850 to 1860?
Yeah, it was hundreds of thousands.
Roughly a half a million.
Yeah, we went from 20,000 people who proclaimed to be Jewish in 1850 in America to almost 200,000 10 years later. So what's that? What kind of increase is that? And does that mean that these Marxists coming from Europe were Jews? Is that what I'm reading here, guys? A great number
Probably.
Of them? A great number. And then I was doing some research for some folks recently, and for myself, very much so. And I found some very unusual stuff, you know, that came about, you know, especially about, you know, there is, if you go, I like to go to the Jewish sites, and I like to read their stuff. And they have a guy named Abraham Jonas, who they claim was the man who made Abraham Lincoln president. And so then we look at the Marxist and look at their influence, and the fact we know that Karl Marx was Jewish, and we know that what they were pushing with this fanaticism in the North. And of course, they had something to grab onto, and that was the slavery issue. And so that was some moral high ground. And, oh, we can grab this moral high ground and we can run with it. But the problem is, folks, that, you know, there was a great population of Jews in the South as well. And they were centered around Charleston and New Orleans. Why were they centered around Charleston and New Orleans? Because those were the hubs of slavery in the South, and they were responsible for the great majority of it. Now, we know in the North that they control Rhode Island, which was the largest slave trading operation, but we have a huge Jewish population anywhere that slavery was manifest. And then suddenly, when they can't make money on it anymore, when the slaves in America are procreating at a number that exceeds the need for new slaves, then suddenly there's no money to be made for it. So suddenly, just and look at down through history, look at how many times they've done this. They suddenly jump ship, go to the other side. Oh yeah, we're against slavery. Yeah, well, you've been bringing slaves into America for 100 years now, and now you're against it? Oh yes, now we're against slavery. We've got to do something to stop slavery. But one of the most ridiculous things I read, now I'm not sure exactly how much you gentlemen have read of Abraham Lincoln's speeches in 1858 when he was running against Stephen A. Douglas for Senate in Illinois. I don't know how much you've read, but this crazy Jewish website says that this wonderful Jewish man, Abraham, what's his name, not Lincoln, but the other one, is that he creates the Lincoln-Douglas debates so Lincoln can illustrate to the world his anti-slavery position. Well, folks, that's so far into left field, it's absolutely incredible. Because Lincoln said throughout his speeches in 1858 that the white man, the black man, would never be equal. He's not for them being equal. He's not for blacks intermarrying with whites. He doesn't want blacks to hold public office. And so, you know, that's just traditional Jewish. They, on their own website, they tell lies about one of their own people. Because absolutely, if he created the debates so that Lincoln could show off his anti-slavery position, he failed miserably in that. All you have to do is read them. Well, Cal, have you fallen asleep out there in Arizona, or have you fallen into a bank of sunshine?
No, I'm still out here in the sunshine. Oh, enjoying the conversation. Boy, this with Matt on here, all kinds of questions come up. I haven't studied World War II in depth, such as I'm sure Matt has. And so, you know, I was brought up on the Holocaust and everything. Matt, was the Holocaust real? In your opinion, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, this is, was, yeah, as it's been presented to, you know, as everybody's been brought up, was the Holocaust real?
No, not in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Other things I've heard. Let's see. Hitler really didn't want a war with Great Britain or America. He was actually more interested in conquering Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union.
Stopping the Marxists.
But, you know, I don't know what the German term was, but they wanted living space. There's some.
Got a break coming up, guys. We'll be back on the flip side. Don't fall in that ocean of sunshine, Cal.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REP.
KUB10.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Yes, I cut against the grain, but I kept my peace of mind. And I wouldn't have it any other way. If there's a price for being me, well, that's what I'll have to pay. And I'll take the
oh,
good
yes,
and
folks,
bad.
I wouldn't have it any other way. And if there's a price to pay for being me, it's a price I'll have to pay. And I would be willing to place a large wager, if I had anything to place a large wager with, that all of the gentlemen on this group tonight feel exactly the same way. If we didn't feel this way, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. And that is the truth matters. And that is what we're in pursuit of. And I will promise you this, it doesn't pay well, but you... I tell you what does happen. If you pursue the truth, you will affiliate yourself with some of the most brave, most honorable, and some of the finest people you will ever meet or know. Because it's a unique group that pursues the truth. I've found that over the last 40 years. There is a unique group of people. And the one thing about them is they are honest to the core because truth matters. And, you know, I just really don't know. Cal was talking while we were off break here, and he was saying, you know, talking to Matt and about asking questions and getting the truth. Well, that's why we're having this program, guys, is so that the truth will come out and we can tell the truth about what's going on in America. And what has gone on in history, which is what we should look at. Marcus Tullius Cicero said, those who fail to learn, you know, fail to learn their own history will be forever children. Well, people, look around you. Do you find anybody out here anywhere that is in any numbers beyond the second stage of concrete development. We are, in effect, when you talk about mentality, America is a huge junior high, because that's the way the people are acting. And, you know, pardon my dissertation there, but, you know, Sarge, you haven't said anything in a while. Jump in here.
Well, I'm curious if if Matt can expand a little bit more about the Holocaust, as far as, were there the camps, were there, you know, people there, were they killed, or, you know, at least to some extent, or is it just something that wasn't anywhere near as big as they claim, or what's the deal there?
Sure. Real quick, I just wanted to answer Cal's question right before break. There was no, the Germans never intended to conquer anybody. Their intention was, and if you read what they actually stated, was to liberate Europe from the capitalist and the communist forces. And then you also mentioned Lebensraum. Just wanted their own land back where their people lived in, like the part of Poland that was given to Poland, part of Czechoslovakia. Well, Czechoslovakia didn't even exist. So some of that and whatnot. They weren't looking to take anybody else's land. I just wanted to get back to you on that. And Jim, on the, I mean, my understanding, my opinion on the Holocaust, yeah, there were camps, right? I mean, there were camps in all nations, France, England, Germany, Russia had the Gulag system. And you want to talk about genocide, people should look into the Gulag system, not the German camps. America had camps, right? The Americans put Germans, Italians, and Japanese into camps. So the Germans did the same thing, because the philosophy was that every nation had was that if there were the people within you that you viewed as the enemy, then they had to be watched. And so not all Jews were put into camps. The camps were for anybody. You could have been a criminal, could have been a Jew communist, it could have been a prisoner of war. Just like all the other nations, the people were just stored there and watched. They weren't murdered. They weren't, there was nothing like that. But we only obviously get one side of it. So the reason so many people died was at the end of the war, the Americans had waged complete, total, unrestricted warfare, bombing everything in Germany into oblivion. So there was no food manufacturing, medicine manufacturing. There was no distribution of anything. There was nothing. So not only did camp inmates die, but German guards and German civilians died from typhus, which is caused by lice, which, you know, if they can't get the Zyklon B to kill the lice and the lice run rampant, then typhus runs rampant. So there's an explanation for everything, but we don't ever get that. So I hope that gives you a quick answer.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, now, Matt, if I may, here's something, one that just, if you want to talk about hypocrisy to the hilt, let's look at what Stalin did in the Ukraine in the early 1930s. He massacred or genocided something over 9 million people.
Yep.
Now that exceeds what we claim Hitler did by 3 million. And yet, this government recognized Russia after they did that, help them cover up the genocide in the Ukraine, and we sided with a madman in Russia who had, you know, before we ever went to war with Germany, who had already genocided 9 million of his own people. Now, how in the world can anybody ever say, well, you know, look, we took the high ground? No, we didn't. We started off with a mass murderer as our number one ally. And that is very provable. Unlike the genocide BS that happened in Germany and Poland and other areas, as it's claimed, that there is very little proof of that. And one of the funny stories.
No, I understand, I agree.
Oh, one of the funny stories, Matt. I'm sorry. One of the funny stories I love about that is the fact that the wonderful gentleman from California who became known as Red Ronnie, who was, you know, Ronald Reagan, he stated openly that he knew that the Holocaust happened because he was part of the army in Germany, and he took a lot of pictures. Well, guess what? Ronald Reagan never left the U.S. while he was in the military. He was making propaganda films. But yet he made that statement, and because a man of his stature made that statement, suddenly it gives credence to something that never actually really happened. Comments, gentlemen? Hello?
Oh, well, I'm just curious if, Matt, have you had any opportunity to review the information and presentations of an Englishman named David Irving?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Many.
Yeah. I think David Irving has probably made one of the very most coherent and cogent arguments as to why the whole narrative of the Holocaust, the Holocaust industry is bunkum. It's of course you've had other Jewish authors that have debunked the Holocaust. Of course this isn't very comfortable information for people who are indoctrinated into this belief system that justifies all their other actions. Because see, if the whole hoax is true, the Zionist Christian can use that as a falling back point to talk about as to justification why these psychopaths have to be a protected species.
Yeah.
Well, DW, what do you think would be the possibility if we traveled around to the churches in America and got the pastors of the 501c3 programs to actually preach a sermon on Stalin and his murder of 9 million Ukrainians in the early 1930s? You think we could get them to preach a sermon on that?
If we paid them enough money, maybe, and we taught them, we'd have to pay them first and then teach them, because I assure you they don't know anything about it.
And they don't want to know anything about it.
That would be counterintuitive to living your best life and the name it, claim it, blab it, grab it prosperity gospel. That wouldn't be very profitable. So, you know, you'd have to convince them that there was something in it for them. They'd have to, you know.
Well, we've got that. I was just going to say, Matt, since you're up there in Montana, why don't you travel over and see if Chuck Baldwin will preach a sermon on that subject?
Ha! I know where he does it, where he preaches.
Pardon me, Matt, yeah. You kind of broke up on me there, buddy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I could do that. I could go over and try to talk to him.
Let's see how that works. We all know what the outcome's going to be before it happens, right?
Yeah.
I haven't heard in my lifetime. I've never heard of a minister anywhere asking the question, why did we ally ourselves with Stalin in 1932, recognize Russia for all of the things, because we, you know, prior to that, they weren't recognized in America because of the Bolshevik Revolution. Nobody wanted anything to do with that. But then along comes FDR, and suddenly we embrace and recognize the Soviet Union, and then we start the Lend-Lease program and start sending them military supplies, which they use to conquer and destroy what we call Eastern Europe. And so we finance that. You know, if you don't believe it, go to Major Jordan's diary, folks. He was actually in charge of the Lend-Lease program, and read what he had to say, and then read his testimony before Congress at the end of the war. America was infiltrated with Soviets. Soviet were actually running the U.S. government in so many ways. If you don't believe it, see if you can pick up something called the Pumpkin Patch Diaries. Any of you guys familiar with those?
No.
No.
Well,
no.
Do a little research and see if you can find those. I think they would be most enlightening. And then there is the Verona Papers, which NSA finally declassified in the late 60s, I believe it was. And read the Verona Papers. And all of this comes out perfectly clear. We sided with Russia, and there were times when the wonderful, what you call him, beautiful, I'm trying to think of who it was. But anyway, they did so many things here. You know, Walter Duranty from the New York Times traveled to the Ukraine in the early 1930s. And he came back and told people, no, all of the words that you're getting about the mass executions, the mass murders in the Ukraine are all, no, it's not true. It's not true. Yes, there's people dying over there, but they're dying from the effects of malnutrition. They're not being starved to death. They're just suffering from malnutrition. Well, you know, and the wonderful American public believed that and accepted that. And at some point in time, America has to take responsibility for allying with a man who had just murdered 9 million of his own people. And then after the war, oh, the guy we allege executed 6 million, oh, what a terrible guy he was, but we were on the side with the guy who executed 9 million. Help me out here, guys, before I fall apart.
Can I jump in real quick?
Please do, Matt.
Just an interesting thing. You know, during the Holocaust, I think there's a picture of, or a few pictures of encyclopedias with the population figures from 1939 to 1948 or 1950. And if you look at it, the Jewish number basically stays the same. Have you guys seen that?
Yes.
So what I never noticed on that, and this shows and backs up exactly what you're saying, Mike, is on that exact same picture, the Protestant Christian population from the same time period, and where were they located, in Central and Eastern Europe, dropped from 200 million down to 130 million. And that shows that 70 million Christians were genocided during the war. Nobody ever talks about that. They only focus on the fact that Jew numbers stayed the same.
Well, that's not unusual, you know, to actually push the people away from the truth. But, you know, pardon me, not to be redundant, but fellow Americans, I must ask this question again. How do you ally with a man that you know has executed 9 million Ukrainians? And just for the record, the three commanders in the Ukraine who were conducting all of these mass murders were all Jews. They were murdering their own people in massive numbers, men, women, children. It didn't make any difference. And so we ally ourselves in 1933 with a man who has executed 9 million of his own citizens, and then somehow, oh gosh, how horrible, we had a man who we say executed 6 million Jews. Folks, I'm sorry, but the irrationality of that one will not escape my head. Cal, jump on me here. Help me out.
Oh, no, you bring up, you know, the Holodomor. That's what it was called, wasn't it?
Yes.
Ukraine. And what that happened, and that's 1933. This is prior to World War II. And so that brings up, okay, now what's going on prior to World War II that led to all this? Well, you trace it back, you've got World War I, the Treaty of Versailles. Germany is absolutely punished with one, the reparations clause of that treaty, and two, the war guilt clause, where they were blamed for all of World War II. And those were two big, as I understand it, were two big thorns in the side or burrs in the saddle of the Germans. Is that correct, Matt? Am I correct on that so far?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you've got Germany's economy is totally in shambles. You got this weak attempt called the Weimar Republic. Nothing's being able to get done. The Weimar Republic is kind of controlled by the bankers. Wait, that's the same guys that controls Eastern Europe, Great Britain, the United States. But in 1929, the banks orchestrate the stock market crash. So now pretty much the whole world's economy is on the same par with Germany's economy. Everybody's suffering all of a sudden. And this is so the bankers can take control. Well, Germany starts rising out of this economic downfall by not using the bankers' money and methods of creating economy. Is that also true, Matt?
Yeah, as far as I understand okay. The government issued their own notes.
Yeah, basically with the rise of Hitler, you know, after the Weimar Republic, he separated them, Germany, from the international banking system. And Mike, you've got a quote from Hitler, or not Hitler,
Churchill.
Yeah, I'm having old man thoughts here. Churchill, where he talks about that. I'm just putting these pieces together. I'm grabbing these pieces of information, these dots, and I'm trying to connect them into a coherent picture that I can see in my head. And so that's why I rely on your guys' expertise on this.
Okay,
help me fill in this picture.
Well, if you don't mind, I would like to read some of those quotes that you talked about, and most people are totally unaware of this. In a 1936 broadcast, now, folks, this is, almost 5 years before Pearl Harbor, Winston Churchill says, and I quote, "We will force this war upon Hitler if he wants it or not," unquote. And then in a letter to U.S. Army General Robert E. Wood in November of 1936, same year, still 5 years before Pearl Harbor, he says, "Germany becomes too powerful. We have to crush it," unquote. And then let's look at what Winston Churchill put in his own book called The Second World War, which was published in 1960, and he said, and I quote, and this hits right where you came from there, Cal, "Germany's unforgivable crime before World War II was its attempt to loosen its economy out of the world trade system and to build up its own exchange system from which the world finance leaders couldn't profit anymore. We butchered the wrong pig." Well, I've got a lot more, but let's comment
Mike,
on those,
Mike,
please.
Go ahead. Mike, read the Hazard. Now read the Hazard Circular.
Well, it would take me a while to run that one down, but it's the same thing.
Okay. That's the point I'm trying to make. The dynamic's the same with the Hazard Circular, isn't it?
Exactly. And that is why I made the comment last Sunday night when Stephen Douglas Whitener and I were interviewing my two old friends from back in Colorado, both of whom I went back registered to vote again after many years. And when I voted in the election, the only thing I voted on was county commissioners. I didn't vote on anything else, but I voted for these two gentlemen. And that's what I wanted to do. And we were talking then about the battle between the West Slope in Colorado and the East Slope. People of two totally different philosophies. Well, I drew the parallel between the North and the South. Cal, you just did the same thing. We are seeing that, but it's always the same instigators who put these things together. And great analogy there, Cal. Go ahead, buddy.
No, that's just, I'm just, like I said, I'm seeing these patterns and I don't want to be ignorant of other things outside of this pattern. I don't want to get target fixation on it, and I want to be able to keep everything in mind. But yeah, I'm seeing this pattern being repeated again. Of course, that same pattern, if you go back in history and study it, you find that pattern repeating itself for centuries.
over and over and over again. And
the War of 1812.
Yeah, they keep repeating it, Cal, because it works.
Yeah,
that's exactly true. Sarge, DW, any comments on those Churchill quotes?
I'm just learning.
Well, it's always good. Yeah. Well, those were timely and appropriate quotes for that part of the conversation. They're like blaring exclamation points. one of the powerful things that helps people, I believe, is demonstrating the patterns and connecting the dots. So that's what those quotes do. That's the same basic premise is occurring when the British understand because of Benjamin Franklin spilling the beans as to, well, why are the colonies so profitable? Well, we're using our own debt-free fiat currency.
Oh,
well, we can't have that. And then, you know, Abraham Lincoln, such as he was, he's creating greenbacks, and this is a problem because, well, it's a debt-free fiat currency.
Right. Can't have that.
So the operative terms here that, you know, when you're trying to parse and unthread these patterns and see the consistencies, it isn't so much about money, or real money or fiat money. It's about the fact that there is a special group of people that retains the dominion, the right to offer money or fiat currency with usury. It's this this usurious aspect that they have to obtain and maintain control of in order to exercise all their other schemes, and they are absolutely willing to kill millions, billions of people at any time or place in order to maintain this control and at the same time remain anonymous, I guess.
Well, here comes the break, folks. I think it's Freebird. Support RBN, folks. Be back on the flip side.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQRS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, I don't.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.